Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It's never the underdog. It's never the underdog. Final Four night.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul. No shoe today, fellas, but we are happy to welcome back Brian Geisinger back with us. Brian, I'd probably jump in and start to ask you about how the offseason is, but I know you do a bunch of draft stuff. I don't know if there is quite an offseason these days, but we figured Duke has some kind of news here. You've covered it for us. So for y'all listening, we're going to hop in and talk a little John Blackwell, a little JBB here. If you're a premium member over on the boards, over 247. You can see both of Brian's articles already. If you're not quite on that level yet, I think the Blackwell one is on his Substack. We'll plug that down here. The JBB one probably coming at some point on there, I would imagine as well. So stay tuned for that stuff. Two, if you're not familiar, we've had Brian on multiple times here. So friend of the pod, covers Duke basketball, covers a lot of college basketball, but writer for 247 Sports, co-host of the BuzzBeat podcast, does a ton of stuff on his Substack. Again, we'll link that in the show notes here. So go make sure you go check that out. Brian, before we get in, man, just kind of how is a little bit of playoff basketball draft prep coming for you, man? What's on the radar for you?
Yeah, thanks for having me for starters. Good to be back with you guys. I think my challenge coin for like my, I don't know, this is like my 10th or 12th appearance on here. Hopefully that's in the mail. I look forward to that.
Most frequent guest for sure.
But
yeah.
Yeah. But, I really love this time of the year, like of the basketball calendar, in part because there's live game inventory happening every night. The NBA playoffs are outstanding. The WNBA season just started. There's international games to keep up with. And now that has taken on sort of a, even more importance with the relation to college basketball, and just in terms of like all of the guys coming from that continent and playing in the, you know, the high major ranks now. And with the draft, there's just like backlog of stuff to keep up with or catch up on, I guess I should say. So I really like it because there's just fewer games happening every night, but there's still live games to watch if you want them. And there's just a little bit more time to like time and space to breathe with the with like the film that you're watching. And I've been really enjoying that. Just trying to keep up with everyone transferring into the ACC and some of the other incoming, you know, international guys too. So that's why Blackwell and Boomshay Boomshay are good guys to talk about on this pod.
Yeah, man. We'll jump right in. I guess we'll start with Blackwell. Maybe because that's kind of the one that was obviously was in the draft process. The expectation, I think, was always for go through, talk, you know, get some feedback, compete, see where you're at. I think this was never really more of the Cedric Coward situation. The expectation was more for Blackwell to stay here. And so we'll get into it a little bit. We've covered it some. We're obviously, for the listeners, if you haven't read the article, maybe pause this, go check that out or pull it up while you're listening, because we're going to reference some of that stuff in here. You know, Brian did a great job kind of really picking apart the value of what Blackwell offers. My question, how I want to set this up, though, is you've probably seen the clip talking to Goodman, I think it was, about maybe being pitched a little bit on point guard and creation and things of that nature. What do you kind of make of that? Because we've really kind of been like, ooh, we really thought the value is more of the off ball and what you can offer there. There's a lot of guys that, like, if Caden's not on ball or if, you know, Rippy's not on ball, what are you really doing with them out there? Where are you at with Blackwell? Is there a path to that, or is this more just maybe secondary creation value that he could kind of offer?
Yeah, I mean, I have a few thoughts about it. One, like, you know, it's an interview he did in April or May. You know, like, it doesn't, ultimately, that's just off-season bluster, in my opinion. Look, even at Wisconsin, you know, John Blackwell wasn't someone that like dominated the ball. Even this past season, that was, you know, Nick Boyd in this fairly, you know, egalitarian spread continuity ball screen offense. But Duke also has a lot of guys that, like, you know, are going to be on the ball next season in the guard room. Everyone knows the names, but Caleb Foster, Keenan Boozer, Rippy, Pat Gongba, you know, from the five position, a ton of the offense is going to get funneled through him once again. I mean, I suppose there's a chance that, you know, John Blackwell could nominally be the one, you know, he's guarding opposing point guards, and, you know, there's this old basketball, you know, adage, you know, the position you guard, that's the position that you are. And I think you've seen Duke under Shire, especially as they've really leaned on five out offense, front court playmakers, Flip, Cooper, Flag, Cam Boozer. You've seen some of these guards that were in the, you know, the Sion James, Caleb Foster role, where they're more like almost like caretakers. You know, they're not running. They're not going to run 50 pick and rolls per game. So maybe there's something like that. But I mean, I think Caden and Caleb are going to be the two guys that run the most pick and rolls for this team next season. If you do it by like pick and rolls per 100 possessions, I wouldn't be surprised if Rippy is above, you know, John Blackwell next season in terms of that too. But I think he's going to offer them, he's going to get to create with the ball plenty. I think a lot of that's going to be sort of like second side looks or them using him coming off movement. Think of some of the like playmaking opportunities you would have seen for like Tyrese Proctor, Con Knipple, you know, once upon a time, where it's not just like pure, you know, 1-5 high ball screen spread pick and roll, where you're seeing him flow off of handoffs and down screens and flare screens into some of these 2-on-1 type scenarios that John is really good at creating in the half court. But to me, just from the outside looking in, like, this guy is coming in to be like, in what I think is a pretty coveted role, which is like the designated shooter in this offense. And you just go back over the couple of seasons of John's career. This is something I mentioned in the piece. but they have at least like one of these guys, McCain. You can quasi fit Derek Whitehead into that year one, but that's a bit of a, I got like a little funny with numbers to get him in on that, but like McCain, Knipple, Proctor, Evans, you know, these are guys that are premium offensive players that get to create with the ball some, but their job is to float around the arc, run around screens, draw gravity, take tons of threes, be like elite screen setters that help get guys open. You think about how good Tyrese and Isaiah this past season was doing that, just how much those guys can help get players open. So he's going to be a like super important offensive player. I think he's going to be like imperative to all of their like best offensive lineups. And again, they're going to need him to like create his own shot and create for others too. But I really do think he's more, again, if he's in that point guard role quasi, it's almost more nominal, you know what I mean? And really he's going to be in that sort of like star shooter role, which again, like all these guys that I just named were all drafted into the NBA too. Whitehead, McCain, Khan, first round picks, Tyrese, the second round pick, all you know, guys that have been rostered on NBA teams. And Isaiah is going to be, you know, a pretty high pick this year in the draft too, most likely, whether he lands late in the first or early in the second. So it's a good place to land, I would say.
Was that something that Blackwell did a lot, operate as a screener, as a guard at Wisconsin? I obviously have not watched a lot of Wisconsin mm-hmm. basketball. The reason I ask is because that seems to be like a skill that players either come in having or they don't, and it can be hard to teach if you're not already used to doing it.
No, I think it's something that I wouldn't say it's a thing that he did like a lot. Probably just from last year's Wisconsin team, I probably watched like, I would guess 10 or 12 full games that I charted of theirs. And it's kind of funny because it's like when you think Wisconsin basketball, you think Bo Ryan. You could go back to, you know, Tony Bennett's dad, Dick Bennett, you think blocker mover offense. Then you get Bo Ryan, you think swing offense, you know, these like sort of like slow moving spread offenses, yep. Lots of off ball action, lots of screening. And Blackwell was recruited into that. But then over the last two seasons, Wisconsin's offense, as it's like really become supercharged under Greg Gard, like they've changed their offensive alchemy. I mean, this has become a team that runs a ton of spread pick and roll, and they run a lot of continuity ball screen offense. So you're getting that sort of like side to side symmetrical pick and roll action. But ultimately, I think like this is something he's going to be plenty accustomed to do. He's built like a guy who can set screens, you know, 6'3 and sturdy. And ultimately, like, I think Duke's staff is going to put him in good spots to really, because I've talked about this on the pod with you guys before. I remember talking about this with John Shire after a Jared McCain game a couple seasons ago. And John was talking about McCain's screening, and John brought up like the best screeners in the world are the best like shooters and scorers. And he was talking about Steph Curry. He was talking mm-hmm. about Jason Tatum. And I even remember him joking, like if you told me that JT, when he was at Duke, was going to become one of the best screeners in the world, like I probably wouldn't have believed you. But he's obviously turned into a great screener with the Celtics. And I mean, Evans became a great screener this past season. I don't think that's something you would have naturally assumed. He's a skinny sort of shooter, score, you know, high volume shooting scorer type guy. But Duke's system can put you in those spots too. And it's important to know that, like, if you excel as a screener, it's going to help get guys open looks, you know, back screens for layups, that kind of stuff. But because of all the screen-to-screener action and because of all the confusion that those screens can cause, you set those screens and you keep moving, you're going to pop into open shots. You're going to relocate into open shots. You're going to curl off the next action into an open shot. So it behooves you in that role, assuming this is the role that he's going to play. And that's just from the outside looking in, that's what I'm assuming. I think he has the chance to really be a guy that really helps Duke's offense off the ball. And a big piece of that is going to be obviously the shooting, but is his willingness to screen for others too. And I think there's a chance that Duke could also lean into even, I feel like I say this every year, so maybe not, but Duke could lean into more guard screening action, just given their plethora of ball handlers. They've got guys like Caden and Caleb and Rippy. These are guys that want to drive and turn the corner and get downhill. And one of the ways you can snap into that is these guard ghost screen actions or blur screens, where hypothetically, you know, John Blackwell runs in the direction of whomever's guarding Caden Boozer, like he's going to screen. And just before he screens, he slips out to the opposite wing. And maybe you create some confusion. You get an open pop three for Blackwell. Or if both defenders take a step in the direction of the shooter, then Caden's got a lane to get downhill and go to the rim. I mean, the biggest piece, one of the best, probably the best like crunch time play for Duke's offense this past season was the inverted ball screen with Cam Boozer and then Evans, you know, setting those screens, and often Evans would slip those screens too. And this is not quite the same thing. It's easier to switch those actions if it's a guard doing it, you know, not a guard doing it for a four or a five. But I think that could be a piece of it. And again, knowing how much Duke's offense is run through the pinch post, is run through the high post with Pat Gongba, you know, Blackwell is going to be floating around screening and relocating a lot in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, and then we'll move on to Boomja Boomja in just a second, y'all. But when I saw the profile, when I was looking at it, real, we've talked about this offline. We've kind of hinted a little bit on the pod, but great time to get to it now. The thing that pops to me or that stands out is the mid-range usage. So Wisconsin, he's very familiar there. He's able to operate there. He's got the freedom there. Duke just doesn't really do that, especially John, right? I think Slim like led the team with like 60 mid-range shots or something last year. Like Blackwell's more than doubled that or something. What is that going to look like? Do you think at Duke, like, does that enhance his game? Or do you think there's a possibility of like, okay, if you're removing this aspect, does all of a sudden he get bogged down in the lane? Does the creation, lack of creation, maybe start to like show out a little bit more? Or do you think John kind of like gives him a little Jeremy Roach action over there and was like, hey, we'll set you up on the empty side. And if that's your shot in the middy, like that's cool with me. No one else though. Like, where are you at with, because I think that's really important in terms of like, what it's going to look like for him, how much on-ball stuff he can and can't do, and all that.
No, I think he will continue to be a like high volume, you know, 3-point guy. I think he was hovering around what 12 and a half attempts from deep per 100 possessions this season. You know, I bet that's going to stay pretty steady. I mean, maybe that drops a little bit, but I think he's going to sort of like be the high volume shooter for this team from deep. And I think that's going to be a big focus. I think you're going to try to find ways to get him around the basket more, but even maybe more as like a, you know, a cutter. You know, he shot 48% on twos. It's not like he's a bad, you know, 2-point shooter. I do think they're going to need guys like Caden, Caleb with their floaters, Blackwell with the mid-range game too, just without having like the Cam Boozer cheat code, you know what I mean? To get tough points, tough, you know, to when things really slow down in the half court. I think they're going to need, they have this incredible backcourt. I think they're going to need those guys to probably create and score from there, maybe a little bit more than you've seen the last two seasons. When Duke's offense really, you know, really became, you know, the dunks and threes kind of. So yeah, maybe that's something you need to get to a little bit more. And I think he'll get like the ball screens he ran at Wisconsin in this continuity offense. It's a lot of like empty side looks, you know, clear out side and, you know, have the, you know, Nolan Winters, you know, run pick and pop with him or roll into the empty side. And I'm sure you're going to see Pat Gongba, Williams, like, you know, all the other, you know, bigs in the front court, you know, involved in those types of actions with Blackwell. But so I think you'll get some of that creation, but it'll be balanced with, again, what I'm imagining are going to be, you know, took 253s last season. I think that's a number that's going to stay pretty high once again.
Yeah, I mean.
And how do those, like guard and big man kind of empty side actions change when you don't have that really kind of dominant high volume scoring four that we've had each of the past three seasons, really? Four seasons, technically.
I mean, I think you're going to have to involve the five in them more. I mean, assuming Pat's healthy next season, he's going to be one of the best players in the country. And Pat has obviously flirted with this pick and pop game. Pat's a good short role player. Pat's obviously very dangerous on the rim runs too, even though that's probably not like the best part of his game. So to have, I mean, that's going to be a pretty awesome player, you know, to get to these empty side looks with. But my hope would be for a guy like Cam Williams, like that's one of the ways you can try to spoon feed him some looks. I'm going to mispronounce his last name, but the Belmont transfer,
yep.
Like there you've got like a live wire athlete in the front court that's mm-hmm. got like legit experience as like a downhill roller, and who played in Belmont, played an offense that's, if you watch him on film, man, pretty similar to like what Duke has run. Now Casey Alexander, he's at Kansas State now, but an offense that was pretty, you know, pretty electric and again has a lot of the similar concepts to what you saw from Duke. So I think there are going to be several good options to get into those looks. What I think you'll see less of is just going to be less of like the inverted type of ball screen actions. You know, you saw with Cooper and Cam so much the last couple of seasons where those guys were initiating the pick and roll as a ball handler. You know, whether it was with Kamon Malawach as a screener or it was with one of the guards, you know, it was with Con Knipple or as Isaiah Evans or Proctor, mm-hmm. those guys setting the screens. And I'm not sure they're going to have that unless Boumshay is just like, I mean, he could initiate pick and roll, but just like, you know, we'll see like how ready he is to really like drive all. I mean, I'm sure they'll like flirt with it and see what it looks like, but. I'm guessing Cam is not going to be ready for that. Maybe they give Pat some inverted ball screen looks. Like he's certainly capable of doing it. You saw UNC this past season, you know, use Henry Vassar as a ball mm-hmm. handler in the pick and roll. So maybe that's a little wrinkle for Duke next season. That would be not something that you would do a ton, but maybe once or twice a game, you try to, after a timeout, you know, you try to create mismatches and like, I mean, John Blackwell setting the screen for Pat Gongba and then popping out is something that would be pretty powerful. So I think there are a lot of creative ways you can get into it and make, you know, mix and match with this offense. But I do think the front court room, even devoid of like, you know, just a someone that's going to be a lottery pick in the 20, maybe Pat will, but just like at that four spot, you know, you don't have one of these, like a top three pick in the room. Right. So you're going to have to, you know, get a little more creative and do some different stuff, but they've got a lot of good pieces on hand to try that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Boumshay, so I guess that's a great segue, but fellas, before we jump into that, let's pay some bills right quick, keep the lights on. We'll take a quick break, we'll come back, and we'll talk some Boumshay.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grunes. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA, FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co. blackwellcoaching.co.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. We'll jump into some Boomche. As I mentioned on the top end here, if you're a subscriber of The Devil's Den, this article is available for you right now. You can go read that. Maybe at the time we release this, it might be up on the Substack, but it'll be there eventually. And again, we'll plug that down in the show notes as well. Brian, obviously, there's been a lot of like interest here. The hype meters are starting to like really pulse for this guy. I think we were talking a little bit offline. We'll save this for a deeper analysis maybe later in the summer. But getting a guy like this might be one of like the best recruiting jobs that John is able to do. And it was really almost a pivot, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. It's like it kind of came through at the back end here. So it's such a big time thing. So you're going to get 2 years out of this guy, but we're all seeing the clips on Twitter. We're seeing this guy running like high ball screens. We're seeing him pulling up from three at the size, at the projection. I guess let's just start it off by walk me off the ledge on this being like the best basketball player of all time. Like, is that the projected path here? Like, where are we? Like, I mean, I just expect next week he's going to all of a sudden be like Giannis defensively or something. And then we're just going to have this like crazy prototype. Like, what do you make of this stuff, man?
Yeah. Well, first off, it's an incredible recruiting effort.
For sure.
It had hints of like, you know, what they did with Coward at the end of last season. Obviously that fizzled, and then the quick pivot to Sar, which was like, look how what kind of player Dame has turned into already and like what he can become.
And you got another year of him, yeah.
And what said Coward, you know, turned, you know, just like they're proving that the like April to early May is like a time for them to, you know, take a swing in the recruiting game, which is, or the, in the transfer portal with Coward. And, so kudos to them. That's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to get a guy in here into Duke, who's going to be there for multiple seasons. I talked about this in the piece, but it's like, it has the hints of like the Jaden Cadence, you know, project the last two seasons at Arizona State and Kentucky that, you know, obviously went belly up, unfortunately, because of his health, but he's such an intriguing prospect. He's still holding pretty strong as like a, you know, potentially like a lottery pick in what is going to be a really good 2026 draft. You know, if I were to talk to you off the ledge of this guy being the greatest player ever, I would say he's still very young. There is a ways for him to go. He's probably not like the best. Like athletically, I think I described him in the piece as more of like a glider. He's like more of a strider than he is this just like unbelievable, like powerful or quick twitch, you know, explosive athlete. I would say even in the front court room at on the Barcelona U18, U22 teams, he's probably playing with some better athletes, you know, Sayon Keita, Mohamed Dabone, Mohamed Keita. These are all like excellent young big men prospects, all of whom have been fun to watch and scout along with JBB the last few weeks for me. So I would say like there's some limitations there just from like a right at this stage, like a physicality and athletic standpoint. But his skill at that size, his movement, like I was texting someone about this a few weeks ago, when UNC and Duke were both still recruiting him, and it seemed like Duke had a slight edge, but nothing seemed final at that point. And the thing I said to this person was, you always bet on size and movement. Like when you're scouting players, whether it's for the college ranks, the professional ranks, like there's no guarantees, but the thing you bet on are size, skill, and work ethic. And this guy at his age, the way he can move, his fluidity with and without the ball, like he's this like pretty impressive, you know, off ball movement shooter. Really, really good. And like, it's just sort of like impossible to ignore. So we can talk about his offensive game a little bit more and sort of like what I see, what I envision from him. But if you're sort of like just at the stage where you're needing to like cool off a little bit, I would say like there are some limitations athletically. There are some limitations on the defensive side of the court. I think sometimes his like awareness and motor can sort of like wax and wane a little bit on that side. But like, I'm not worried about that long term. I think he's going to be, sort of like just fine in terms of that. And I think he actually shows good anticipation. And with his length, he's going to, you know, be a good rebounder and be a guy in passing lanes. But I don't see him being this like an amazing, like disruptive defender. So again, there's some limitations on that side of the court. And then everything else is just like, it's going to be a big adjustment going from playing against, you know, he's playing in a great basketball academy in Europe against good competition. But the jump to the ACC and playing against, you know, 22, 23-year-olds, people that can, bump and out-muscle him, guys that are going to scrap and work hard. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what the matchup between him and Cam Williams looks like, you know, in practice, for Duke next season. I mean, that's going to be incredible to have those two guys, you know, start trying to bring the competitive factor into the practice room. So I would just say patience, you know, with him is the big deal. There's unbelievable potential though. And offensively, you could watch just a half of one of his games. You can just see it just dripping off of him with his size, shooting touch, passing, floor vision, all that kind of stuff. He's very skilled for a player his size and age.
Mm. You brought up the fact that he's going to have to make an adjustment going, you know, from where he's playing now to the ACC. How difficult is it to evaluate a player in such a different context and project how they're going to look, you know, in ACC basketball when the style of play is just so different? Obviously he's playing U18, U22. So the age difference is there as well. Can you speak to that a little bit? Kind of a more macro question, I guess.
No, it's a good question. It's a important one and something that I think about a lot, especially as I'm evaluating, sorry, if you guys can hear my dog barking. He's excited for the hoops conversation too. But this is something I think about a lot, even with regards to like veteran college players. But like, there's several players that are coming from the West Coast Conference to the ACC next season. Christian Hammond, who was at Santa Clara, who's going to be at State next year, and you're like, he was really good in this league. How does that transfer over to a pretty significant jump in competition? And ultimately, I think there's a lot of like context and situation stuff that is important, but that's really where, like I said a minute ago, like you bet on size and movement, and for him to have the smooth movement, the fluidity offensively, the fluidity in the open court, the fluidity with the ball at 6'10", 7 foot. So someone who's not even like fully physically developed yet, you're like, yeah, that is something you can project moving over. The fact that he can shoot it, you know, it's like that stuff, you know, that stuff is usually pretty transferable too. So you're looking for traits, you know, and there are there's not necessarily any guarantees, but you're looking for traits and just trying to think about skills, micro skills, and physical traits that you want to identify and have in certain players that are going to fit into a prospect, an archetype, or a piece in your system. But never, I think, in the college game has that type of like evaluation been more important than it is now. Just given the importance of the portal, given the importance of recruiting guys from Europe or international. And I mean, look, if international prospects are going to continue to be like a major piece of the college basketball landscape, then teams are going to start grabbing guys from more places than just Europe, right? I mean, Duke went and got Kaman Malawach, from Africa 2 years ago. And I remember watching Kaman before he came in, and you're watching games, him playing in the BAL and watching him play a few minutes in the Olympics and being like, how does this, you know, right. But 7-1 who can fly up and down the court and jump and is coordinated. And you're like, well, we'll just roll the dice on that, you know, but they're going to see more players coming in from continents that just aren't Europe. I mean, South America, I think, is a pretty like untapped market, huge continent with some great basketball playing countries. And
Australia, think, obviously, is a
one that's been used for a while now. You think of a program like St. Mary's that is like really built up, has won a lot of games because their ability to go into New Zealand, into Australia, and to pluck guys out of there. So again, I think teams are going to have to get even better at doing that. I would say a program like Duke is pretty well situated. I think Chris Carrawell has talked about this with John Shire, but you have a guy that watches everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're junkies too, right? Any European game that I can tape that I can get my hands on, it just like feels like you've stumbled into a gold mine. So some of that stuff to become more accessible now is really nice. Yeah. But I think ultimately you're trying to watch as much film as possible. You can't just go off the numbers. Those are important, but you got to watch film and you got to look for traits, look for skills and even like micro skills, not just like shooting, but I'm talking about like mid-range touch. You know what I mean? The ability to, I should also say with Boumshay, very, I wrote about this in the piece, but pretty like dependent on his left hand too. So I will be curious to sort of like see as he tries to like branch out and use his right more. I meant to mention that earlier, but micro skills and traits, I think are really where you're going to have to like drill down and get super good at evaluating and trying to project that with a jumping competition, including one where you're maybe even sort of like less sure, like the sort of like stableness or stability of the talent level of the conference isn't flat either, right? Like that, even that is sort of like a moving target. And obviously just because of out of conference stuff, Duke's going to play a crazy schedule too. So it's not just the ACC. It's like, you know, you're looking around at
season at Fog Allen. Like
you just look around at the other 20 best programs and it's like, well, what, you know, Everyone's trying to figure it out on the fly. But I think, again, I think there are certain things you're eyeing. And lastly, I would say like, I think this is also where intangibles can matter a lot too. I have become a like full blown subscriber to communication as like an important piece of evaluating. And I've got this honestly from just spending a lot of time around Chris Paul and Mike Krzyzewski, who are two guys that preach talking and communication, and they're not the only ones, but I am true believer when it comes to that sort of stuff. And Duke's not recruiting guys that aren't competitive. And
yeah, so that's like a pillar of the program. Yeah.
So if you talk, if you're competitive, if you're like willing to be coached, and clearly if you're buying into this sort of like 2 year timeline, that's development's going to be a big piece of it too. So I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And there's no perfect formula, but, ultimately it's a roll of the dice, but there's certain things, indicators you're going to look for too.
Yeah. Sure. Both, Kaman and Sar were pretty big talkers. So. Yeah, I'd be interested to see if that's the same with Boumshay.
Yeah. Kaman, one of the best talkers. He and Lively, as I've said on this podcast.
Yeah, before, Lively like, was such a treasure.
Two of the best at just quarterbacking stuff from the back end of the defense. Guys like Proctor and Khan, like excellent communicators, you know, as well. So Caleb for that matter too. So, absolutely.
A lot of those, let's talk a little bit too about, cause you had a lot in your article. And you know, obviously this has been mentioned and floated around, but it's a copycat league and John Shire is someone who is very affluent in what the NBA is doing, how they're playing, what's going on. Not so much like right now currently, but like what Mike Brown was doing with Karl Anthony Towns the last like month and a half or so of the regular season. I mean, there's a clear parallel here a little bit with like, hey, this could be something that we utilize with JBB. This could be something that we could tap into. There's a lot of the same like defensive hiding that we might have to do, but there's a lot of this like stretchability, like, you know, he can run the inverted ball screen a little bit, like you mentioned. The pop skills are like obviously pretty much there already, like in terms of the ability to pop and shoot that. Not so, you know, maybe not so much like off dribble yet, but there's a parallel there to me that I'm seeing. Like, is that too far off in terms of like, okay, Brunson's there, Bridges is there, like you got dudes, Anunoby's there to like cover up anything. Is there similarities in that game there? Do you see Duke maybe trying to tap into that? Maybe next year a little bit, but like year two as a hub, is that yeah, possible?
I think a couple of, Pat's obviously going to be their hub this year. Next season. And he should be watching Karl Anthony Towns right now and just 100%. Seeing like how he's turned up as a distributor and a defensive playmaker for New York. But no, this happened. Like, we were having these conversations 10, 12 months ago about the Pacers, right? And how, playing with pace and full court pressure and strength in numbers and the importance of having your 10th guy in your rotation be able to play in lineups with your best players too, and how you're only as good as the sort of like the worst player in your rotation. And that stuff like has trickled down. It got talked about. I cover the Charlotte Hornets. They talked about it a lot this season too, sort of people trying to like, you know, emulate that pathway. And I'm sure just given how, even if New York gets swept in the finals, I don't think they will, but just like their play the last month has been like one of the best stories in basketball in 2026. Mm-hmm. And so of course people are going to look to pilfer this. I mean, I think there's some stuff where it's like, yeah, it helps having multiple awesome wings. no doubt. Like this, I do feel like when people talk about New York, it's a lot of like Brunson, Towns, for obvious reasons, they're the best players on the team, but it's like, I mean, Anunoby, Bridges, Harden,
too. Just these
unbelievable wings that they have. And it's like, you know, one of the reasons why I think New York is able to, with a smaller guard in Brunson as their best player, they can just cover up so much stuff because they've got these Anunoby and Bridges, especially these just like incredible wing defenders, and Towns has gone up a level defensively too. As far as like JBB goes, I mean, there's so much stuff that Duke just in house that Duke has done the last couple of seasons for Flag, for Cam, that I think he can snap into place pretty quickly. Cooper and Kaman, that like 4-5 pick and roll was such a big piece in early offense two seasons ago. And if you watch Barcelona play, like they run a fair amount of like 4-5 pick and roll with JBB initiating, and it's DeBone or it's Cato or the other Cato, they're rolling, and he's pretty good at like making plays against drop coverage. He's patient. He makes plays in space, those paint decisions, as Duke's coaching staff would label them. And that's something that I'm sure they're going to work on and hone with him. He doesn't run a ton of like inverted ball screens with Barcelona, but that's just absolutely going to become a piece of it. Like if his playmaking continues to develop, if he continues to be an on-ball guy, he's going to run a ton of inverted pick and rolls. That's just like the way of the world right now. Barcelona, he's not like a... like, because he's not that strong quite yet, he's not the kind of guy you just like dump the ball to in the post and force the defense to he's not going to just like command a double like Cam Boozer, you know, this past season, or like Cooper if he could get a switch. But they play with him in the post and they dump it into him and they'll run, you know, split action off of it. They'll throw it to him at the elbow and they'll run split action off of it. Those are sort of like natural things that happen in the flow of Duke's offense, all of their little like flash game and pinch post stuff. And then on top of it too, like he's pretty good coming off screens and shooting. And if you remember, like that was something that they did with Coop a fair amount. You know, they would run, I sort of always referred to it as like the KD option play, but they'd have Cooper start underneath the basket and he could either like curl to the post off of a screen from one of the guards, or he could shoot up the middle of the lane off of a down screen from Malawach or Malik Brown. He could pick, like, and I called it the KD option play because it's the play that Kevin Durant has run roughly 27 million times in his career. It's like down screen to the short corner mid post, or down screen up the gut of the lane for a three. And I think that's the kind of stuff you can get into him with him too. Like, he's got that kind of like off ball movement game. I think there's some like real malleability to his game that you can use and feature him in all kinds of different ways. But just like to state the obvious, I just wouldn't put a cap on it. Like, this guy is so young. He's so skilled. Try it all. like try everything we just listed plus more. Try it.
I mean, they run some already good stuff. Like, they're already running good stuff. Like, one of the clips I saw, they ran this little set where it's like they're looking like they're about to do like an empty side, like pick and roll. And he's just like over here, like behind the crowd, just kind of like almost like he's just going to be in the corner. But they like almost ghost this one. He curls through, sets another screen to flare out over there, which is clearly that's the intended set. And it gets the whole side moving. So just him at 17, 16, having this knowledge of like, here's how to navigate screens. Here's how to like flow into different actions.
Yeah.
The ability for these kids coming in to have that and possess that is kind of crazy to think about. Like, if you've been watching basketball for the last 20 years, so you're already getting like an IQ level that's up there. Like, he shouldn't have a problem, I would think, like understanding that aspect of like how to move, when to set, when to reset. These are the language, I'm sure, is probably going to be a little bit different, and you know what they call a ghost or a flare or whatever. Yeah. But like, they've already been utilizing it and tapping into that a little bit. So I think, you know, what John did here is you just loaded up with like just a unicorn type, like lottery card. Like, it's just a wild card that, you know, maybe he's your ninth guy, but maybe he's good enough to be your fourth guy. Like, who knows? And
maybe he pushes Cam to hit a different level. You know what I mean? Just because he's got to jump up a level. You know
how much he's got to do? Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
that's actually something I was going to ask you about.
Yeah, like,
One thing I wanted to touch on, one of my favorite actions that Barcelona has run with him, I clipped one of them, but I've seen it in a few other games too, is they do, it's like an Iverson screen where he starts at like the, you know, one of the elbows. One of the guards for Barcelona cuts across the screen from the four and the five. And they have JBB then cut like down through the middle of the lane and then come through. They run like elevator door screens for him. So it's like kind of a screen to screener play, because he sets a screen for the player coming, cutting across on the Iverson screen. And then he relocates to the left wing, running through the elevator doors. And to have a teenager, 7-footer, 6'11", whatever he is, be able to like run through that action, square himself to the body, and then have that like feathery left-handed shot. Pretty advanced stuff, you know what I mean? And stuff that even in the college ranks, even in the NBA, like lots of like opposing fours and fives aren't like ready to like defend that kind of stuff too. They're not ready to like defend off-screen action 26 feet from the rim. So he's super versatile with and without the basketball. And also, like, he's got, just to add to the list too, like, he has a nose for like what I would describe as like hustle or garbage points. Like, he knows to run the floor in transition. He gets on the offensive glass. I think he's able to really leverage his size to score sort of like easily against smaller opponents on these putback looks. But maybe that'll be a little bit more difficult for him translating initially, but like, he just kind of has a nose for the ball and a willingness to like hustle into points, as opposed to just needing like isolation every time down the court to get his buckets.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be exciting, man. I do like the competition aspect between like him and Cam. I guess we'll get out of here in just a second, but for you, like, how do you kind of compare those two? Because there seems to be a lot of similarities in terms of like role or like
build, how we're going to skill set
them, wanting them to kind of do a lot of pop stuff, maybe a mm-hmm. little bit of kind of like, can you attack a closeout? Is there any downhill potential here? Like, how do you kind of compare those two as like maybe prospects?
I need to see more Cam. Honestly, I've seen a lot of JBB the last few weeks, and I just really haven't seen a lot of Cam outside of like, I don't want to put much weight into like McDonald's all like that. Just
yeah,
like
all star type events. Yeah,
it's just there's just nothing really of there's very little of value to pull from that. So I need to watch him a little bit more before I can like really answer that question for you, I think. But again, my thought from the outside looking in would be really leaning into his like athleticism too. It's like like a downhill guy. I mean, if he's going to be popping in the space, yeah, can those turn into catch and goes? And can you get downhill? Can you be a lob threat? Can you be another pressure point on the rim? You know, they've managed to turn Pat into like a decent lob guy, but some of the best Duke teams for John, you know, had guys like Derek Lively and Kamad Malawach. And I'm not comparing Cam to those guys, obviously, but for them to have someone they could really like put the ball up in the air and let just like be an athletic finisher, I think that could really give them another dimension. I think having guys that can run with SAR, you know, fill lanes on the break, be athletes, be play finishers. And I would say like for someone like Cam Williams, it would just be like, man, defensively just
That's it. Yeah.
Switch, guard every position, be crazy disruptive, rebound everything. Like you want to like stay on the court, defend and rebound. All the offensive stuff, like it's going to come to you. Like run the floor, cut, get on the glass, slip screens, you know, set good screens for John Blackwell. He's going to curl, draw two, dive to the rim, play finish and defend and rebound. And don't F up on transition defense.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like to me, it's like when Cam Williams is at his like absolute apex best, it is the defensive motor and you're seeing like, I hate to do this, but you're seeing like flashes of like defensive high school Coop highlights almost where he's just like attacking, rim running, like defensively, like he's coming from help side, throwing stuff, pinning everything on the glass. To me, that is where he could separate himself from JBB a little bit if that motor is elite on that end. And it's like, hey, I'm going to go erase everything. I'm going to defend in space. And like you said, I'm gonna catch my lobs and not travel on the fast break. Right? That would be nice. I may own drills all summer, bro. Well, let's get on that. But it should be a great topic. I think we'll probably continue to like explore this one over the next several months, probably over the next year, to be honest. Like I think that battle and that versatility that those two are going to offer continues to kind of pop for Duke. But fellas, we've won an hour. We'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. We can go ahead and transition and get out of here. Brian, appreciate you, man. We're going to link all of the stuff down in the description, but give you a chance to kind of plug anything that you got, anything going on, anything in the works as a draft and obviously just summer kind of stuff starts to get rolling here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Please like, subscribe my Substack page, briangeisinger.substack.com, titled Split the Action. My publishing has slowed down a little bit there this off season, but it's going to continue to roll in. I've been publishing a lot of freelance pieces at 247, Blackwell, JBB. I've written a few things about some of the incoming guys at NC State. I continue to contribute to Swish Theory, which is a great site covering the NBA draft. And I believe you guys have had some other contributors to Swish Theory. Ben Pfeiffer, who's one of the best, come on the pod as well. And it's been a little while since I published a piece at Basket Under Review, the Trilly Donovan site, but I'm contributing to continue to be a contributor there. And I'll have more stuff pop up there, I'm sure, over the summer as well. It's going to be a lot of like transfer, you know, roster projections, that kind of stuff. And then with the Buzzbeat podcast, just covering the draft, really focusing on that. That'll eventually will turn into the off season as the Hornets have some decisions to make even beyond the draft with extensions and all that sort of jazz. But Buzzbeat podcast, you can find it at all of your podcast apps. But again, the Substack page and my freelance pieces at 247, Basket Under Review, and Swish Theory are where you can find most of my work.
Very nice. And I definitely, for all Duke fans too, like, you should check out the BuzzBeat podcast. I listen to it a lot, especially now that we got a lot of Duke guys there.
Yeah.
Con, right? Like, if you want to get in on that, go check that out. I think they just did one not too long ago, like, where they're doing some like season review stuff and term perspective stuff, and obviously draft is
on the way. The one where you talked about the four different prospects that Charlotte would be looking at the 14th spot there. That was pretty good.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that. We're sort of going through things position by position and just sort of going like, all right, we're picking four of the bigs. Then we're doing four of like the power wings, then four of the shooters, and going through all of that stuff. We did, I think, a pretty good one a few weeks ago that had, you know, Yaxel Lendenborg and Merez Johnson and Hans Steinbeck. We're fixing to do one on some of the fives, including Jaden Caden. So I mentioned a few minutes ago that should be out relatively soon. And we're still doing, like, my co's, Richie and I recorded one that was on Brandon Miller. Blanking. It was Brandon Miller and Tijon Salon, sort of like a report card episode on them. So if you like the Hornets, if you're curious to know how Khan's doing, you know, how Sion's doing, we talk about those guys a lot. We talk about those guys a lot. So yeah, there's plenty of that there.
Yeah, very nice. I need you to pull your leverage and get me. I need one of those Con City jerseys, man. I keep looking, can't find any. Need the sunburst in my life, man. Put it out there. We'll soak it up. But yeah, for sure. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. We'll probably have you come back on here in a little while. We'll do a draft recap, get back into all of this stuff. You know, it's the off season, but you know, it never really stops, y'all. Right. So everyone tuning in, we appreciate you as well. Please continue to rate, review, subscribe. You can email us, thedevilsinpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter @devilsinpod247. And keep the faces strong.